Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is the Writer's Lounge, show number 84. This is May 25th, 2015. Happy Memorial Day to everybody out there. And this, of course, is a show where we just showcase new authors. And I'm your host, Tom Riddell. And coming on shortly here is my guest co-host, Bobby Hughes-Billman. A brief intro to today's show. We're bringing on Christy Tajajuner. I'm probably really screwing up that last name, but we'll talk to her about that when she gets on the show here. And it's about pirates. So get your pirate hats out, get some bottles of rum ready, and on we go with the show. And the Writer's Lounge blog can be found over at timeriddell.com/blog. And the Blog Talk Radio player is in the upper left-hand side of that page, and you just click on the favorite author and listen to the interview while you read all the reviews over there. Facebook link on the Blog Talk Radio site, go ahead and click it and like it. And Twitter, of course, you can follow us over on Twitter, and you can contact us the old-fashioned way at twl11@yahoo.com. Upcoming guest authors in 2 weeks, Andy Weir will be on June 8th. With the book, The Martian. It's soon to be a movie. It will come out here at the end of November. I believe November 25th is the date for The Martian. So mark your calendars for that. Andy Weir is going to be an interesting host here, or an interesting guest here on the Writer's Lounge. And we're really looking forward to having Andy on. Magic Pen Web Design is our sponsor. And it offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. You can go over to magicpenwebdesign.com, fill out the free estimate form over there, and let Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. And today, if you'd like to give us a call and talk to Christy or myself or Bobby, you can do that at toll-free at 877-878-1436 or 626-213-5613. And this is the point in the show where I do bring on my guest co-host, Bobby Hughes-Millman. And I'd like to welcome her. I understand she's been busy cooking today on the barbecue. And happy Memorial Day.
We have family who's come over, and we're doing that whole Memorial Day weekend barbecue. So we have the brats on the fire and some hot Italian sausage and salads and chips and all that stuff. How about you, Tom?
Not doing anything exactly. What I have done is I've spilled my dinner all over the floor right before the show started. So I have got to go in there after the show and find something else to eat. And if I was close to you, I'd probably come over for leftovers. But that's not the way it works in today's world. Maybe in the future I can get on a flying spaceship or something and make my way over to you within minutes. So that's not gonna work too well. So I'll find something to eat.
So we can start teleporting you over for barbecue. That would be great.
It would be great. And so what's going on with you? Any news or anything exciting in the writer's world you want to talk about?
Well, there's exciting news in the writer's world. Not a lot that I can really talk about too right at this point because it's still in the very infant stages. But I did recently read this interesting article. It's in the Writer's Digest. It was a May 13th article about a writer, William Zinsser, who recently passed away. And he had given an interview to the Writer's Digest in 1985. And he's written 18 books, and he is an award-winning journalist. And they had five quotes from him that I thought were really interesting, and I wanted to share that with you tonight, if that's okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. So the first one was, and I thought each of these were great, and they're very helpful for me as a writer. He says, "You can't stop and ask, is the reader going to like what I'm writing about or like me? You just have to have the ego to go for it and do what you want to do. The minute you try to think about what people want, you're dead. There's no law that says you have to keep 100% of your readers enthralled."
Yes.
But I thought that is really
good, and it really hits home with me because I actually did that today. I wrote a piece after I listened to an individual was talking about time travel. I think you might have seen that on my Facebook. And as I'm writing it, I'm wondering, is anybody really going to be interested in this? And that's the wrong way to approach writing, as you had mentioned in the quote that was given. I really think that sometimes we get so hooked up with wanting people to like us and to get that audience response that we kind of lose a little bit of the writing edge, I think. It even takes away our ability to write, and the quality of our writing goes down as a result.
Exactly. And if we are writing from our heart, and I think we've discussed this on a previous show, if you're writing from your heart and what you really enjoy, the way you enjoy writing it, then, of course, you have to keep your writing clean and edited well and ensure that everything works out and matches up in the end. But when you're writing from your heart, you're writing something that you put your passion into it. The passion has to be there, and there's going to be someone who wants it.
Yeah, I think you're right. And then if you kind of maybe compare it to other artistic endeavors, such as being up on stage and telling a joke, I think one of the hardest things to do is to be a comedian up on stand-up. Mm-hmm. And if you're not getting the laughs from the audience, it's very painful to watch, and it's probably 10 times more agonizing if you're actually up there on the stage as a comedian. Yeah. So we have a little bit of a break we do as writers where we don't really have to worry about how people are going to respond as far as applause. They may read us, they may not. We don't know. That's sort of the invisible element that's out there. But still, it'll show up in reviews later on, but we should still write what we feel we want to write. Excuse me.
Right, exactly. The second one, all writers should strive to deliver something fresh, something editors or readers won't know they want until they see it. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. And the third, every time you look at a blank piece of paper, you're doing something new. You have to step onto that blank territory and remind yourself the sky didn't fall in the last time you wrote. Writing is a question of overcoming your fears, and everybody has them.
Mm-hmm.
Humor and optimism are lubricants in writing, as they are in life, and a writer lucky enough to have them in his baggage will start the day with an extra round of confidence. I think so.
Yeah.
And the last, I have always believed you can almost will things to happen. You just have to hustle yourself and your talent. And I know that to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Talking about the blank page, when you sit down to write something, Bobby, did you ever just sit down and have absolutely nothing in your head and then all of a sudden just maybe look out the window and maybe see an old man walking along the street or a girl riding her bicycle and then immediately start to write that image down on the paper and just let it roll from there? In other words, let your imagination go from that point. Did you ever try that?
You know, I did, believe it or not. I was, I spent about a year, and every day I wanted to write at least one short story. And I didn't make it through the whole year writing at least one short story a day. Because then I went into writing my novels and I started writing a chapter a day. But there were times I sat down and prepared to write my short story and couldn't think of a thing and waited for something to creep into my mind, something that appeared out of nowhere from my window, from my living room, anything. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, there was a... And this sort of gets into my subject tonight, but there was a site a long time ago, probably going back to maybe 2000 or even before that, where people would post pictures and it would just be a simple picture of maybe an overturned boat on a beach, maybe what you would call a homeless person sleeping on a bench with a newspaper over the top of him. And then what you would do with that picture, excuse me, is to write a story about what you see and use the image to, you know, inspire you to keep writing. And I've submitted a couple of those stories, and it always seemed to do pretty good online. And speaking of being online, I don't get around much these days online. Most of my time is spent on Facebook or, as you know, doing a lot of book reviews and such, and spending time on starting the show up. Boy, I don't know what's around my throat. Let me grab a little sip of water here and just a second here. Maybe you can fill in a couple seconds.
Okay.
I'm okay now. Just a little dry throat here. And so anyways, I decided to take some chances and to go online and to look for authors and also look for writers and writings, and I went to a place called onlinebookclub.org. It's got a lot of readers on there, and it's got a lot of reviewers on there. And a lot of the books that are covered online on the onlinebookclub.org are books that you would probably most likely see on the bestseller list, New York Times bestseller list. And a lot of people will write reviews and a lot of people will make comments. They have discussion boards and all that stuff that most online places have. And so I decided that I'd go in there and I would sign up. And I did that. And I found the site to be pretty active. In other words, it's not like walking into a ghost town. A lot of sites these days, you go on to them and they're dead. They've only operated maybe 2 or 3 months. And then they stop. Everything stops. Nobody pays any attention to them anymore. And it's nice to see that there's people out there that are still interested in reading and they're still interested in writing. And I know that there's been a few people that had mentioned to me, knowing what I do, they were asking me if I thought that the bookstore was history. And I told them that my feeling about that is that bookstores will always be around. It's really sad to see them go, but I still think that they're going to be around. They're not going to go away, even with all the e-books out there. And I'm glad that people are paying more attention to books, it seems, than I thought they were. So that's That's my thoughts on that, and I was wondering if you had any thoughts there, Bobby.
No, I think that's a great opportunity. I think it's a great idea. And, you know, there's so many out there that are worth revisiting and hearing from again. I don't know how many times I pick up an older book and I know that I've already read it, but I want to read it again.
Oh. So. Yeah, that's interesting too. How many times have you actually picked up a book and reread it? I don't find myself doing that a lot, but I know that there are some really good stories out there. You know, I love Mark Twain and Huckleberry Finn and all those books. And it's kind of fun every now and then to sit down and reread a book that you haven't read in years. A story comes to my mind right away is Treasure Island, which kind of brings in the subject of tonight's show, and there's a lot of interesting stuff in Treasure Island, and we're still waiting for Christy to appear on the board here. Hopefully she'll be here shortly if she got the right number, but anyways, yeah, Treasure Island is one of those books where you could go back and read it again and still love to read the old book that you read maybe when you were, I don't know, 10, 12 years old, somewhere around there, I think, when I read that book. And then there's a couple others. If you remember, Bobby, probably Black Beauty. Are you familiar with that book?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, my son is reading a book that I found when I was in fourth grade. And my sister had said, oh, it's too mature for you. You'll never understand it. And I said, no, I understand this. I like this book. And it was The Outsiders. And my son came, his teacher wrote to an email to me and to all the other parents saying they were reading The Outsiders. And I got so excited, and I told my son, you are going to love this book. And he's not one who loves to read, but he loves it. He loves it so much. He wants to check it out of the library and read it again. And I want to read it again because it's been so long. Essie Hinton, she wrote that, and then she wrote That Was Then, This Is Now. And I remember as an adult, they came out with a movie for The Outsiders. And I grabbed my friend and said, you are going to see this movie with me. She never read the book. And when she saw it, we loved it. We both were crying at the end. But it's a great book for teens and for boys and girls. It's just, I love it. It's just a great book, and I'd love to read it again. And also there's, of course, John Steinbeck is no longer with us, but John Steinbeck, I love his books, The Pearl and Of Mice and Men. And those are books, they're small. They're books that I will read again and again.
Yeah.
There are just so many of those out there. And, you know, who says that once we read a book that we have to put it aside and never read it again?
Exactly.
There's a television series on Stars right now called Outlander. And when this series was coming out, I remembered that a friend of mine was telling me about the Outlander books. And she said, they're about 1,000 pages long, so they're pretty long.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly for sure. It's been a while. It's been years since we talked about it. But I know that it has a huge following of people who've read the books and now have been watching the series with. As it's been going through, my husband has been watching it with me, and we're both enthralled.
Yes.
But it's just a great story. Diana Gabaldon is the author.
Yep.
And it's just amazing, well done television series. I'm dying to read the books, and I know I will be getting those and adding them to my library very soon. I'm really excited.
Well, we did have a caller come in here, popped in. I'm thinking it was Christy, and then she went away. But Anyways, let me start my review of The Queen of My Nightmare. It was written by Christy Tajiran and published by CrateSpace in 2014. You may purchase it at Amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit the author on Facebook. And this is what Amazon had to say about the book, or actually this is a brief intro to the book, I believe, from the author. I didn't want to be a pirate, but there are times one must do undesirable things in order to survive. Under Mason Bentley's Black Flag, I ended up finding more than just the refuge I was seeking. He taught me to fight, inspired me to navigate, and by the time we reached Tortuga, I was drawing maps so fine I could sell them. No longer a weeping, helpless woman, I took hold of my courage to face the cursed world that wished to punish me for witchcraft. Strong, rich, and free, I finally claimed my throne in this kingdom of thieves, but it was the love I shared with their king that cursed me with a broke burden I was not strong enough to bear. What good was it to be a queen if the only dominion I held was over a nightmare? And it was from Midnight. And this is what I had to write about the book in my review. What intrigues and delights me with these stories of old, in this case a pirate story, is the ability of the author to bring a colorful sense of realism to the tale. I often think of pirates in the same way as I think of gangsters, bad men who have not an ounce of good in them. But human nature doesn't work that way. We can find good in anyone if we just take the time. And so it was with Hannah when she boarded Mason's ship. To make it safe for Hannah on board with many drunk and dastardly men, she had to become a man, or at least to look and act like a man. In order to be at Mason's side, Hannah became Midnight, and she was soon out to sea, experiencing the agonizing and brutal ways of a pirate. To sail along with Midnight as he attempted to maintain his disguise, while also being engaged in a vicious and bloody war with another ship, was very entertaining. As the years continue, Hannah struggles with life, and her trust in Mason wanes, but she holds on. The author is exceptionally good at descriptions of place and actions. It's as if she threw colorful buckets of paint onto a black and white distant past. This is a love story that is very well balanced with just the right amount of interesting twists and turns in it to keep you reading until the very end. This author has talent, and I would encourage her to continue to write and to think about lengthening her stories. I want to read more. And with that, I'd like to bring on Christy, but unfortunately, she hasn't appeared on the board here. Someone came and then they went. And Bobby, let me just check my email here and see if she sent me anything here, because she had all the right information. She had all the right telephone numbers. I just don't see her showing up on the board. And if this happens, this will be a first on the Writer's Lounge where the author did not appear. So I don't know what we'll do with the show. We'll have to probably reschedule it another time, but we're hoping here in the last couple of seconds, spend a little bit more time here, and hopefully she'll show up. But
I can tell you that from what I've heard from the premise that you read that is on Amazon about it, it really sounded well written. It sounded intriguing, and that's I think that's sounds like it's a fun book that I would be very interested in reading. How did you feel? Did you really enjoy the read as you were reading it? Is this something that you've is the type of style that you like to read?
Well, I read a book, and looks like we have her now. Let me just bring her on here. We got two numbers. Christy, is that you?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Is that you, Christy?
Oh my gosh! I was trying to call over and over. Jeez.
Well, you're You're on now, and I want to, you know, welcome you to the Writer's Lounge, and Bobby is here, and we're ready to go, and
Hi,
could
Christy.
You read an excerpt from your book?
Hi. Yeah, let me finish everything. This is my typical style. Okay.
Christy, are you there?
Here.
Christy, are you there?
Hello? Hello?
Christy?
Is that working? Hello?
Hello?
Oh, this is horrible.
Christy, are you there? We can hear you. Can you hear us?
Yes. Now I can hear you.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi.
Sounded much.
I'm so sorry about all that. Okay.
No problem. Could you read an excerpt from your book?
I sure can. After all that action, how about I read you an action scene? Okay, I decided to read one of the battle scenes because those are some of the more fun for me to write. This one is Midnight's first shot of battle, and I wanted to do something a little bit different with this one, so it's an audio view while she's hiding.
Okay.
Okay. The release of anxious tension on deck was akin to the power of lightning striking the earth, and the action now forming around me was like the fire following the electric assault. Throwing barrels of salt water, sprinkling sand around the decks, and preparing their weapons for war, the crewmen sang and chanted a fearsome tune, harmonizing with the flapping of the canvas sails above and the thrashing of the wooden hull against the tumbling sea beneath us. Mason's encouraging shout, encouraging howls were the loudest of the bunch, feeding the intensity of this hellish wildfire like kindling. Not a pointed finger or shout of command was taken without swift response, but as the chaotic symphony unfolded around me, I stood there like an idiot. I'm pausing there for a minute because that wasn't exactly what I wanted to read. Then she ends up going below to hide, and this is what I wanted to get to, with the fearsome possibilities ringing in my mind, the roaring on deck intensified above us. Esmeralda dipped low into a swell, rising with a quickness that almost made me feel sick. And the moment she balanced on her tide, a shot rang out from her starboard side. This was much different from hearing it as I had many months ago. This time, I felt it. The deck trembled from the blow, and the daunting smell of sulfur drifted into the darkness surrounding me. Another shot mirrored it. From the sound of things, I assumed it to be Reed. We were closing in around our victims. The sound of the musket balls escaping their chambers echoed in the air, and the savage roaring magnified as the Spanish sailors' voices also came into range. Amidst the terrorizing shouts of the master sailor and the master gunner, I heard bodies dropping to the ground and footsteps falling hard on the timbers. My mind could only imagine the horrific reality that was raging above me. With my eyes closed, I heard Mason's monster's voice blast the command to fire. With Seth crying and shaking in the background, the loudest, most horrendous sound I ever heard struck the air, a broadside. All seven guns from our starboard side fired at once. The thump was unruly, the explosion was out of this world, and the sound of the heavy valves ripping through the galleon's timbers tore my heart to bits. Before I had a chance to catch my breath, Reed fired a similar volley, but rather than a shattering blast following the thump, it was a ripping, tearing cry.
Very good, and we'll give you a chance to catch your breath, because it sounds like you're a little bit out of it there. But
after that crazy trying to get on the phone, I'm so sorry about that.
Yeah, it's I don't know, sometimes it happens, but we got you here now, and I just wanted to ask you, Christy, first of all, I want to get your last name correct. How do you pronounce it?
I didn't hear that. It's Tyrone. It's surprisingly different than it looks.
Tyrone, okay.
Tyrone, yeah.
All right. Well, we know that now, so I do apologize for the mispronunciation. But I'd like to ask you, why write about pirates? What intrigues you about them?
Well, I've liked pirates since I was a kid. And thinking back about it, it probably goes back to the movie The Goonies, which was one of my favorites when I was little. And then my mom reading us Treasure Island, which I heard you talking about that book earlier. And just the adventure, the excitement, and all that with those tales. But also been a rebel soul. I've never been one to go with the flow or follow the crowd. I've always dressed different, dyed my hair different, like, you know, done things my own way. I've always wanted to stand under my own flag, per se, and that's just what the pirates did. So that's what interested me in them. But when I began writing this book and started doing the research on the history, I just became completely obsessed with this stuff.
Very good. Bobby, you got anything for
Christy?
Sure,
what kind of research do you go into to learn more about this type of topic?
Well, it started at the library, just getting books and whatnot, because I always, reading historic fiction has always been my favorite, so that's what I wanted to write. So I went to the library, started reading different books and learning things, and the history is far more fascinating than anything I could have ever imagined. And the life of a pirate is quite different from what I even had thought it was. There was a lot of surprising things that I learned along the way. And the more I learned, the more I wanted to learn, and I realized that I wanted my book to be as real as possible, so what I didn't know or couldn't find easily, I have found people who know things and have interviewed them.
That's interesting. Yep. Okay. So you found people and interviewed them, and what did you learn?
I have a whole like list of people here who have helped me in different ways. For one, my friend Barnabas, he is a guy who's been studying pirate history for longer than I've been alive, and he more than willingly shares his information with me. And so we'll just sit and talk about things that he studied compared to what I studied and what we learned. And so a lot of the action and battle tactics and things like that come from the things that me and him have discussed. And then also I have my dad used to go fishing with his cousins. And so a lot of the actions of the sea and different storms and weather and whatnot I get from him. But then putting a tall ship into the setting. Once again, I talked to my friend Barnabas, who's a sailor. Then I have another pirate friend, Captain Nico Lorensky. He's helped me, too, putting the tall ships into the scenes and sailing commands and different things that the captain or master sailor would shout out during these settings. And I have a friend who's a blacksmith, Will Smithy King. He's a master blacksmith at King's Forge in Muzzleloading. He makes replicas of historic weapons. So I talked to him a lot about what kind of swords were they using, what did they feel like, what was the metal like, what types of things were they using during this time period. I have another friend who helps with the language, keeping, there's a lot of things that we say now that they didn't say back then. That's
right.
One of the harder things to get correct.
Yeah, and also I learned from talking to another writer who wrote a pirate story, and I believe you know her, P.S. Bartlett.
Yes, I love her.
Yes, she's great, and I'm sure she's probably listening now, so hello, Peggy. But what I did learn was that the pirates didn't really have people walk the gangplank. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, that's kind of a myth or legend that people have spread around. I'm not exactly sure where that began, but they did have plenty of other interesting torture tactics and punishments that they put into play. One of the more common ones was keel hauling, where they would, tie a rope around their hands and legs and then throw somebody over the bow of the ship, and then they'd get tugged under the ship as it went forward and come up the backside. Generally, people would drown, but even if they didn't, they're most likely going to get sliced up by all the barnacles underneath. So that was a very common one. Also, marooning. They would drop them off on an island with a bottle of water and a pistol with one bullet and
wow.
Leave them there.
Yeah, not fun.
But, But that was, you know, they had their punishments, but I guess what I kind of found is that pirates were not the bloodthirsty cutthroat tyrants that the world has made them out to be. And I'm fascinated by the reason that people became pirates. And I've looked up a bunch of different historic people and their stories and how they got here, and come to find that most of them were running from a harsher fate ashore, whether they were runaway slaves, indentured servants. A lot of them were kicked out of the Navy, or, you know, the war was over and they didn't need them anymore. No pensions, no retirement. All they knew was their life at sea. And so they went back to the sea. And so these people, they banded together. They were a bunch of people who had nowhere else to go, that weren't accepted anywhere else. So they came together. They had their code of conduct, called Article of Agreement, that had generally, give or take, 7 to 13 rules that helped to bind them together and keep them in line. And I'd like to tell you a couple of the rules that I found interesting.
Sure.
One of the really neat things is that the captain was voted in. A pirate crew is a democracy, and everybody was equal, and everybody had a vote and a say. So the captain, he's here, he got his power, he's voted in, but if he turned out to be a tyrant or if he was overbearing, they could vote him out. And so he had to be good to his men and pay them well. Then there was no gambling, because gambling led to fighting, and there's no fighting allowed either. So these guys came together to fight against the world. They weren't allowed to fight against each other. All duels were to be settled ashore. And then they also, surprise to the world, kind of came up with workman's comp. They have, like, an insurance, per se. If you got hurt at sea, if you lost a limb, you'd get compensated for it. They'd pay you generally 600 to 800 pieces of eight. And you didn't have to leave the ship until you saw fit. You were allowed to stay on board, even if you were crippled or injured or somewhat worthless, because these guys knew that you had nowhere else to go.
Uh-huh.
So you have all these riffraff, you know, hooligans, per se, come together, and though they were robbers, there's no glorifying that. But they did. They came together and worked together and treated each other fair. And people that had nowhere else to go in the world, that treated them very cruelly, all of a sudden had a place where they had a voice and a vote and were generally rich.
As I wrote about my review, I mentioned a lot of that can also be related to the behaviors of gangsters. A lot of those guys were nasty, cruel people when they were doing the crimes, but their families were pretty well put together and pretty well held together by a lot of guys who actually were decent people. They weren't all bad guys, but they did bad things.
Yes, absolutely. And I often refer to them as gangsters while I'm writing, because they were bound to this code and they were committed to this crew regardless of whether you thought this was right or not. If everybody else voted, yeah, we're going to do this, you kind of had to do it, or well, you could get keel hauled.
Yeah.
So there was definitely a brutality to it and a gangster mentality about it. But, you know, it's not all black and white. There's good ones and there's bad ones, just like everybody else in the world.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been writing, Christy?
I've been writing, well, my whole life I've always written poetry and little short stories and things like that. But I just started doing I've started probably about 4 novels prior to this that never came to be. And now that I've started writing books, I can't stop. The floodgates are open. The words just keep flowing.
And that's what it's like, isn't it, Bobby?
Yeah, it's definitely how it is once it gets in your blood. So,
Bobby,
Are the pirate stories your main interest, or what type of genre do you generally find yourself interested in writing?
Well, so far, pirates, but I would like to one day write Western stories also. I've always been interested in the Wild West and cowboys and Indians and all kinds of different things with that. So one day I'm going to write Endless Horizon Western stories, but I still have a good, I don't know, 10 pirate stories floating around in my mind for a while until that happens.
Mm-hmm. So okay. You've done your research. Have you ever traveled to any of these areas that you write about?
Well, it's probably kind of where it started. Was my parents took me to the Caribbean when I was 14. We were on a cruise, and we went to 7 different ports. And just the water, the clear, warm ocean water was just breathtaking. The islands, the greenery, the leaves, the trees, the flowers, the way it smelled. We got to swim on the bottom of a waterfall and a pond there. And we also got to go to a few, like, pirate towers and guard points and whatnot. And so that just interested me. My art, because I paint and I draw also, and so a lot of my artwork is inspired by my visit to the Caribbean. Because it was it was an amazing place with a great atmosphere that captivated my imagination ever since.
And notice that Hannah was also an artist. So you and her have that in common.
Absolutely. Writing her artistic scenes and that part of her spirit definitely bonded me to her character. Because when I went into this, I didn't think I was going to like Hannah as much as I ended up liking her. We'll say that.
Yeah. So the character sort of developed, right?
She definitely did. Because in my other series that I wrote prior to Uncharted Secrets, I have the Justified Treason series, which is about Hannah and Mason's son, Sterling, and his later life as a pirate and whatnot. And so it's based on a little bit that he knows about his mysterious mother. I wrote that in my author's note in Uncharted Secrets, if anybody reads that ahead of time. So Hannah was very much a mystery to me. I only knew a few things about her, and so I had to dig into it like a crime scene almost, where I had to figure out what happened to her, what was she like, what was she into, how did she end up here and there at these certain times in the other series. So it was quite interesting, filling in those gaps with this Uncharted Secret series. That's hence the name, was all the things I didn't know, and we figured out in this series.
Yep. Yes, and then of course, you know, the love story that we have here is a very good balanced love story. And I wanted to know, when you write love stories, and it can be very complicated, and I know what a lot of people that are looking to read a good love story are looking for, but how do you decide? For instance, let's get right to the chase here. How much sex do you put in a love story? And how little do you put in and still make it a good story?
Well, I love a good love story. I love the bond of the characters, the unity, the relation, the passion. I love all that stuff. And as far as the sex goes, to me, for one, I try to, when I do those scenes, I try to keep them what I call emotionally steamy, without, you know, so you can feel the passion and the bond of the characters without getting too far into the actual, you know, deed itself. And I like it here and there, but as me and my son Sarah, who helps me write all of these stories along the way, we always say we don't like to just do sex for the sake of sex. I like it to have meaning for the rest of the story, each of those scenes. And to not be, that's not all the story's about, that's just a part of the story. And
yeah.
So it's interesting balancing those lines out when you're doing an action and a love story all in one. It's definitely a tightrope to walk, but I do my best to have enough of both to where, so far, I have male and female readers. I have pirates and, you know, land lovers, and so I just kind of walk a line where I can kind of keep everybody interested on all sides of it, and as just real life, just all of these aspects that I write about, I do my best to keep it true to life and what it is and all the interesting sides and corners of the world that we experience while we walk this earth.
Bobby, what do you have to add on that? Anything?
I think it's she said it pretty well.
Yep.
I agree. Oh, tough one.
Yeah, and then when you're sitting down and the book is done and you've got your book ready to go out, what do you do as far as editing? And do you let your friends and family read it?
I have a team, a loyal crew, I call them, because as far as I'm concerned, it takes a crew to write a pirate story. And I have my system pretty much goes as I write the story, pretty much chapter for chapter, I give it to my friend Sarah, who is she's a major in psychology, so she helps me with like the character emotional aspects as I go and make sure everything lines up realistically to the characters' personalities and whatnot. And then my sister Tori, she gets it next and she helps me pin down the details and the, you know, she's really good about like, hey, slow it down right here, right before this happens, you know, let us have a moment to catch our breath there and speed this up here. You need to whip through that. She helps me line all that stuff up. And then I have my friend Janine Wiley is her pirate name. She gets the basically finished once it's ready for the editor. She reads over it and handwrites these amazing notes that are just invaluable to me, line for line. I love this. What the heck was that? You know, helps me catch any last-minute snags or errors or things that might seem like a loophole, questions everything I'm doing, gets me to make sure that it's, you know, basically perfect by the time I give it to the editor. Then my wonderful editor, Stacey Coverstone, goes over it, cleans it up, and gets it to where it's, you know, ready for the world. Then I add her edits, and then I usually have one last reader go over it. Generally my friend Beth, she's a journalist, so she can make sure everything's just how it needs to be. And recently I got a new guy working for me there, Shortcake. He's another pirate, and he's been doing the final reads, making sure that everything's good, let me know if he catches any snags. Plus he's interested in all this crazy pirate history too, so he's fun to share the details with as he reads, you know. And then at that point, formatted and it's ready to go, and we, you know, ship leaves the harbor and we see what happens as everybody gets a hold of it, you know.
Yep. It's a good way to look at it when we're, you know, putting our baby out into the world, and hopefully somebody will pick it up and be good to it. And sometimes they're not so good to it. But as far as being a writer, an author, what's the best part and what's the worst part?
Let's start with the worst part. The worst part, the hardest thing for me is, to be honest with the world, I barely graduated high school, and I've never once passed an English class. So
wow.
Writing, storytelling, all of that is natural to me. Like, I've always been a storyteller. But to actually put it on paper and write it in proper English is not, you know, it does not come naturally to me. So I've had to learn a lot since I decided I wanted to publish. I had to learn a lot, and I've had friends help, and I've had, you know, my editor's amazing. She's helped me so much along the way, and every book I give her comes back with less and less red marks on it, you know. So I'm getting better with that as it goes along, and I'm very adamant, because I'm doing it the hard way, I'm very adamant about doing it well, and I guess, you know, it's never too late to learn something new, you know. And so that being said, that's the hard part. The best part is, hands down, hearing back from the readers. That is the most amazing part of this whole experience. Because not only, you know, do I enjoy creating it and all the time and sweat and tears that I put into writing it, but then to see that somebody that I've never met a day in my life reads this book and lets me know that they went on this journey with my characters that I created and learned something new and felt feelings. And I've even made a few grown men cry, so that's a pretty big deal. You know. And so to know that my imagination is, you know, thrilling other people makes all the hard part more than worth it.
Yeah, Bobby, isn't that what it's all about?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I can I can kind of relate to what you're saying about the English part. But the one thing to understand is that sometimes it's not, when we're in school, it may just not be the right time for us.
Mm-hmm.
When I was young, I really wanted to write. But then I had an English teacher in junior high who made me feel like I was the worst writer ever.
Junior high.
But when we're most vulnerable and we think that we can conquer the world and then we find out we can't. So I was crushed and then I went to college after a while and I found that actually I can write. But learning some of those, some of the grammar was a little harder and improving in that way. So, yes, I mean, writing is about being able to tell a story, and the grammar can be learned. I teach grammar now, believe that or not.
Take it to that teacher that was mean, huh?
I teach it to people in Europe, but online. In the way that I teach, I take the opposite approach from how my teacher taught me. Rather than being critical, I tell them what they do well. And then when they make a mistake and they're bothered by the mistake they make, I tell them, no, we all make mistakes. But the good part is you're doing it with me and I'm able to help you to improve. And
that's awesome.
And that's my goal, is to help them and help them feel good about it. And the more confidence a person gets, the more they're willing to go out there. The more confidence you have in your writing, the more you're willing to go out and try some more and try different things, try new things. And I think that once you really take that dive, you really take the chance, that risk, is when you start seeing things happen for yourself that you never anticipated. And like, if you were able to hear when I was reading some of the quotes from an author.
I did hear it, but I couldn't call. I did hear those cool quotes.
And those quotes are just really, they're apropos no matter what time you're in, because if you're willing to take that risk, go out there, do what you love, write what you love, somebody is going to like it. And so,
absolutely.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you're doing. That's
I was going to say, good for you, Christy, for doing what is probably quite anxiety-provoking. I know that myself, I'm a person who is afraid of speaking in public. So for me to get behind a microphone is a little bit difficult, and sometimes it's even more difficult when you're standing up on stage. So to overcome something such as, bad English or whatever you want to call it, and still get the story out shows what kind of drive you have. And, your readers appreciate it. And I've watched and looked at your reviews, and you're doing very well, girl. So keep it going. And even P.S. Bartlett, Peggy even told me that you're amazing, that you've written so many books and so far ahead of her, she doesn't know how she's going to ever catch up to you. So she was talking a little bit about that. But anyway, we're kind of winding down here. We got about 5 minutes left, and I'd still like to ask you about the series that you're writing. Have you got anything else planned for the future? And any passing thoughts, and where can the listeners find you on the internet?
Okay, I have this Uncharted Secret series. It has 4 books now. It's going to have 5 by the time it's done. My Justified Treason series is connected to this one. It's later in life. It's just about to have 4. The fourth one's coming out. I'm currently revising the first 2 because they were my first 2 books, and there's plenty of rookie errors in there that I just wanted to clean up and get it up to my current standard. So those will be coming out July 1st, and then the fourth book will be coming out August 1st. And then I plan, that's going to have five when it's all done also. And then, and I'm so excited about this, I'm going to write Mason Bentley's life story in a series of its own.
Wow.
He's a big character. People really seem to like him. I love him to death. He's one of those characters that just, he just speaks. His story tells itself. I already have a good deal of it written, and it just, like, pours out like water. So I'm very excited to tell his story. That one's going to be very adventurous, you know, action-packed. Not too much love story. Obviously, Hannah will be in it at some point. But it's going to be a very different take on the whole pirate setting. So that eventually will be coming out. And so I have my future pretty busy here in the writing world. Definitely, there's always going to be more on my horizon here.
Yes.
And as for where the readers can find me, Facebook, of course. I have my Endless Horizon Pirate Stories page, and I have a website, endlesshorizondesigns.com. And I guess that's the major things there. And I'm very, very interested in speaking with my readers. I do my best to keep in touch with everybody that messages me. I'm all about having a personal experience because I do this because I love it and I love hearing back. And I'm always willing to answer questions or just talk about pirates and all that good stuff.
You know, one question that I didn't get in that I wanted to ask you, how many books have you written?
Right now I have 10. 10 books out right now.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. Good for you, Christy. And thank you for being on the Writer's Lounge. And Bobby and I both wish you the best. And we'll probably be hearing from you again. And I'm really sorry that you had some technical difficulties at the beginning of the show. But
story of my life.
Yeah, that's the way it goes sometimes. So, again, thank you so much. And we will be talking to you again, Christy.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a great time.
Yep.
Bye, Christy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So, yes, we have glitches here on the Writer's Lounge every now and then. Sometimes I go off the air, and sometimes we have trouble bringing people on, Bobby. But we make it through. And are you ready to go to Mars in 2 weeks?
I am so excited about that. I can't wait.
Yes, we're going to Mars. And then in November, we're going to see Matt Damon playing the part of the character in The Martian. And then we're going to go into December with Star Wars. So it's a really exciting time here coming up in the next several months. And Andy Weir is the kind of guy who's very excited, and he's going to be a lot of fun. He's got good humor, and I can't wait to have him on. Once again, everybody, that's Andy Weir, who wrote The Martian on June 8th here on the Writer's Lounge. That's in 2 weeks. Until then, let the story begin.
Mm-hmm.
Bye now.
Bye.
Dark as night in the middle of the day. Your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Noah, one beautiful morn. He said, Noah, get ready for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. Like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow.